Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
You're listening to Kaya Biz, from one legal matter to another. Many of us as South Africans were horrified by the Tembisa Hospital capture. The hashtag that's been trending, as it has revealed many layers to what has been described and defined as the Maumela Syndicate. On Point of View, if you were listening last week and available on the rewinds, you'd be able to catch up on much of the themes and conversations that were discussed around the size, the scope of not only the Maumela Syndicate, as it's been called, but also an understanding of the 2 billion rand financial fraud and corruption that has impacted Tembisa Hospital and many of the public affiliated to this healthcare facility. But we thought we'd give you the business story, a better understanding into how it is that in a country that has such high levels of compliance, changes that have also been implemented in terms of our objectives to get off the FATF, Financial Action Task Force grey list, why is it that we still find ways within corruption still thrives in South Africa's economy? To tell us more, we're joined by Christopher Milan, Executive Manager at the Financial Intelligence Centre. Mr. Milan, welcome to the show and thank you for your time.
Well, good evening to you, and thank you for the opportunity to engage on this very interesting topic.
It's a huge topic for all South Africans, and I think many of us are just, again, dismayed, frustrated, and perhaps even angered by the reality of the reality of corruption in South Africa. But I guess first things first, I'm not too sure if the Financial Intelligence Centre does have a standpoint or an immediate reaction to what we've been seeing being discussed so far via the Maganga Commission, the Ad Hoc Committee in Parliament, and even the various raids that have taken place so far. But how do you view just how this continues to reveal the financial malfeasance that takes place in South Africa?
So thank you for those very, very interesting questions. Let me just issue a disclaimer. So we cannot comment on those matters which are currently being looked at or investigated or being considered. We can just talk to symptomatic issues which would then throw light on the fact that revelations that have been in the press for quite some time now points to the fact that yes, even though we have been greylisted, that is not the end of the challenge. It is a whole of country issue that needs to be dealt with, and it starts with really the proceeds of crime. The proceeds then, let's assume there's a state-owned entity and somehow the funds are pilfered from that entity, and then it goes through a complex web normally of structures and entities that are set up in order to hide those proceeds from scrutiny. And that you would see is what we say is the modus operandi. It invariably happens so that you will then find months and years after, when the matter is investigated, you will find common themes. What are these themes? Yep. One, very seldom would you find that the persons who benefit from these unlawful proceeds of crime receive money directly. It is through a web, a complex web of companies and structures, right? So that's issue number one. And that issue is first and foremost dealt with very, very pointedly by the FATF, the Financial Action Task Force. Yes. And it was an issue in our grey listing as well. It's called beneficial ownership. Yes. So we have in South Africa a framework that companies must disclose who ultimately owns them, and trust as well. Who are the beneficiaries of a trust, and who are the ultimate natural persons that control and own a company? And that has been a process in grey listing that we have addressed to an extent whereby all companies in South Africa have to disclose who are those ultimate natural persons. And it is through that mechanism we hope to be able to have a lens into seeing that if we then know through investigation that ABC companies are involved, we will have on record the natural persons that are associated with them, and that we can then throw the spotlight on as the recipients of unlawful proceeds. That's one set of issues. The set of issues which are the facilitators. Who is facilitating this? Now, these are professionals normally or businesses, let's say accountants or lawyers. They would be in the business of setting up structures, setting up companies. They will form these. They might not know the ultimate purpose for which it's formed, but that's their business. They would set it up for clients. The clients then get involved in shady dealings. Then you may have the estate agent. An estate agent may then be approached by one of these recipients of unlawful proceeds because they want to buy property, but it's not their lawful gains. It's illegal money. It's unlawful proceeds of crime. Mm-hmm. You will then find that estate agents or property practitioners will be approached by persons that want to buy high-end properties normally. Mm-hmm. A third type of category you also get is what seems to be the flavor of, and it's very symptomatic, high-end motor vehicles, Lamborghinis, Range Rovers, you know, all the high-end vehicles seem to be the focal point of persons that have this questionable funds, unlawful funds. They will go and seek to then buy these vehicles, and therefore motor vehicle dealers need to be on guard. Property practitioners that are selling property need to be vigilant. Lawyers that are conveying the property, moving it from one person to another person, need to be vigilant. And we require of all of them to report to us. So that's the mechanism in a nutshell. And I've tried to touch on all the issues you've alluded to.
I'm glad that you've educated us on this one. And I understand the sensitivities, Mr. Milan, regarding the current inquiries and legal conversations at play. And it's a beautiful refresher you've provided us on a previous conversation we had with you back in April of this year, especially regarding lawyers and estate agents. Many South Africans have asked, okay, we understand that there's a heightened level of disclosure for us as individuals when making assets or purchases for particular assets or even registering our own businesses. But how is it that perhaps, you know, this heightened level of disclosure is not, and more so compliance, is where we see industry professionals falling through the cracks? As you've said, it's one thing to have the intricate system to actually launder the money or find a structure within which to process the money. But are we finding that industry-wide, lawyers, estate agents, and even those who work for car dealerships are also complying with raising the red flag when they do see a transaction that's untoward? Or, much like the world of capitalism, does the profit come first?
Well, you know, first and foremost, these are businesses. Mm. And as businesses, they have their motive to remain in business. The problem comes about when they facilitate questionable deals or what seems on the face of it to be a deal, but it is being paid for by funds derived from criminal or proceeds of crime. Mm-hmm. And it's that educational level which I don't think we've hit the sweet spot yet. The FIC has been on a journey, as we have accounted to you, to bring awareness to particularly the property practitioners, the lawyers, you know, that they need to realize that, yes, they are in this realm of providing services, but we require of them a higher standard. They need to be skeptical about transactions, in particular, if it's a client that they've never ever seen before, they are selling a property, property is high end, and this person then comes and say, oh, the property is 5 million, I'll pay for it cash, or I'll split it up this way. The funds seem to be just too readily available. Because normally, you and I and everybody else, we would have to take financing. We would have to take a bond. You know, so there are telltale signs. And I think where we have to really get them on board is that they need to really accept, and I don't think we are there yet, that they have a serious role to play as upstanding corporate citizens. It goes beyond them just servicing clients. They also need to be responsible for the outcomes of what they are facilitating.
Got you. Mr. Milan, beyond raising awareness, is there any further level of accountability and consequence management that the FIC is looking at, especially for key players and business leaders in the industry?
So, So over the years, you would have found in the newspapers, I'll just give you a hypothetical example of issues that come to light in the press. It then triggers a chain reaction. You will find that the authorities will then look at those issues, whether it's through a whistleblower or some other discovery of what has really happened. And then there are questionable proceeds, and then there are assets that have been purchased. And people living beyond their lifestyle could not have afforded this in a normal earning capacity means. These are really unexplained wealth, unexplained money. That then sets in chain a series of transactions. And here also we expect our banks to play a role, because if they have a clients that they bank and suddenly this client is receiving huge amount of monies coming into their account, from which then they have to ask questions, because it is a requirement in our law, they need to ask source of funds. Tell me, and even lawyers and estate agents have that requirement. You need to disclose to me the source of the funds. Now, look, people will obviously not tell you the truth, but, you know, there is that skepticism and professional scrutiny that is required, and they then have to report it to us. We then set in motion, once we get a good sense of what is happening, we can identify the delinquents, criminal people that have been involved in questionable activity. We can identify from bank statements and other reported information, property that have been acquired, whether motor vehicles or the like. We can then set in process a chain reaction. We then put together a profile of what has happened. We then prepare affidavits. We contact the bank. We contact asset forfeiture, even SARS, even SIU. We set in process a discussion. Yes. We then can instruct those institutions to freeze those funds for 10 days to enable us to go to court. And then we'll make an application in court to seize those assets and to preserve it. Until we can take further steps. The purpose of that is to remove the people that are benefiting from their unlawful activity and these unlawful processes, to remove that benefit and enjoyment of these assets which they've paid for with criminal derived money, remove it and put it under the care of the state for a process to unfold where we can confiscate it at the end of the day and charge them criminally. So that's the mechanism. So I'm trying to explain to you that all is not lost, but it takes time and it takes a whole of society to work with us as part of law enforcement to detect these the persons and the assets so that we can take action against it.
100%. Thank you so much for your time, as always, Mr. Milan. Looking forward to speaking to you and I guess hopeful that we do make it off the grey list by the end of October, but we'll await that feedback. Thank you again.
We look forward to speaking to you at the end of October, and let's see what is the outcome then. But thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Always a pleasure speaking to you. That's Christopher Milan, Executive Manager at the Financial Intelligence Center.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.